we just don't have the data, have reached their lowest level in 4 years. So 4 years ago was we were still sort of like coming out of COVID. I should also just make a little note. When I say that, I'm not talking about the existence of the virus. What I am talking about is the shutdown. I mentioned this the other day in the context of education. And someone was sent an email, said they were upset because I was ignoring the fact that COVID's still around and the implications of long COVID here. What I was talking about specifically was there was an extended period of time where a lot of students were out of class, and it obviously hurt them. You're not sitting in right. class. And so I was talking about that. The unemployment rate for workers between ages 20 and 24 is 9.2%, the highest it's been since 2015. Across all age groups, the number of people working part-time who would rather work full-time has been drifting up. There's a lot of concern in these numbers. The problem is, I think, that investors are also convinced that inflation is going to be a problem. And so the Fed is sort of stuck between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah.
Their job is to try and shore up employment numbers, but also to contain inflation. And
it looks like we are in prime conditions for stagflation as well, which is what they're concerned about. And the fact that in terms of, like, you know, we played to start the show yesterday, Trump once again musing about wanting to fire Jerome Powell because he's maybe considering not lowering rates in this upcoming meeting, which might be today. In part of the problem is that because the administration, because of these jobs numbers being withheld for a while, like, they don't have the information necessary also to understand the full economic picture.
Here is Fox News reporting on what these economic woes are doing to Donald Trump's numbers. This is Fox News, folks. And so just so you know, it's very hard for these bad numbers to it's rare when Fox will report this type of stuff.
And they couch it even a little here, I feel like.
But the issue of affordability, the issue of how people feel about the economy popping up in our latest polls, the personal financial situation now, excellent, good, 40%, only fair or poor, 60%. You can see that changing from July. Condition of the U.S. economy, also a perception totally upside down, 76 to 25, and that changing a bit. And then economic conditions for the nation and you personally, again, 25% positive, 76 negative for the nation.
Pause it for a second. This is really interesting because a lot of times you will see a much greater disparity between what people think it is for the nation, what it is personally.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, like a year ago, I'm quite convinced that these numbers, there would be far greater disparity. Never mind the positive negative, differential, which I think would have been somewhat similar in 2024. But the difference between this is impacting me negatively personally versus this is impacting the nation negatively was far greater than 16 points. People generally, they'll see, and what's also surprising about this, or I should say maybe perhaps not unsurprising, is that we have not seen the blitzkrieg of media attention on the economy like we did in the run-up to the 2024 election. Now, part of that is because it's a run-up to an election,
right,
and it becomes much more salient. But we have not heard as much about the stumbling in the economy as we did then. And so people are just talking about what they are actually feeling. 60% of the country is personally saying that things are negative. And then they're looking around at their friends or what meager amounts of news media coverage they're seeing about the economy and going like, ooh, So this is pretty damaging stuff.
It is the lowest approval that Trump has ever had on the economy ever recorded in this Fox poll, 38%.
And just this, you know, unlike other things on what's your opinion, you know, how economic conditions are for the nation is an opinion more often than not. But how it's impacting you personally is an indication of just not just like what your opinion is, but right. what your material situation feels like. So that's pretty good. Let's play this one. Here's Harry Enten on inflation and approval just from this morning. Again, when Fox is putting out these polls, you know you've got a problem. I guess he's only going to now go on. What is it? What's left now?
One Nation. What is it called?
One America News, or I don't know. Here's Harry Emden.
Yeah, John Berman. I would say this is probably the worst 10-day period for the president in the polls his entire second term. The numbers are just atrocious. What are we talking about here in terms of net approval rating? Well, take a look. These are all November polls. The best one of the group puts him at 14 points underwater. That's the Marquette University Law School poll, tied for the worst he's ever had in that poll. Fox, 17 points underwater. Marist, 17 points underwater. The Reuters Ipsos poll, 22 points underwater. And then taking the cake, the AP North poll, 26 points underwater. When your best poll has you still 14 points underwater, you know it's truly bad, and it's as bad as 26 points underwater. We're talking about an average well underwater with the deep blue sea swimming with the fishes.
And now this is all parties here.
Yeah, keep going.
You think this is bad, Harry?
If you think this is bad, what is driving these horrific numbers for Donald Trump? Well, why don't we take a look at independents, Trump's net approval rating with independents. Back in January, he was close to even. He was at minus 4 points. Not great, but not terrible. Look at this number. 43 points underwater with independents in the most recent average of these polls. When you have 43 points underwater with independents, you know you're doing terribly. You can't win with this. If this holds for next year's midterm election, wave adios, amigos. Goodbye. See you later to that House Republican majority and that Senate Republican majority, very much in danger as well. When you take a look at the Pew Research validated voter survey going back to last year, he was basically even among independents with Kamala Harris. Now he is 43 points underwater. Whatever he is doing with independents, it ain't working. They despise him at this point.
That is just a colossal
drop. Oh, my God. It's a 40-point move.
Okay, that's a...
Oh, my gosh. You want the inflation part?
We can do the inflation part, but you have to ask yourself, what is that? Like what? And I don't know, you know, maybe we'll have a chance to look at some of like the internals in that poll, but,
yeah.
That it would be that this bad right now, I would imagine, is a function in part of what we're seeing with the immigration stuff. And how people are experiencing that. And the government shut down.
The
healthcare and Epstein.
Yeah.
Well, and
I just
want to
correct myself just that the meeting is not, I guess it's in December for the Fed, just so people know. But the Fox poll does have a good sense. They asked on six different issue sets how people approve or disapprove. And the only issue that they asked about that he has above 50 approval on is border security. But then when you go to immigration, to your point, he's underwater there now. 53% disapproved to 46%. 55% approve of his foreign policy to 43%. And a lot of that is buoyed by, like, you know, the fact that he was able to, at the very least, get a ceasefire that Israel's repeatedly breaking, but in Gaza for a little while. And then he's over 60% disapproval on the economy, tariffs, and healthcare. And I'd imagine that is, like, you know, when people are starting to also think about their premiums, and you've got 20 million people with the subsidies from the ACA that are looking down the road, That's tied into like just the cost of living as well. So it's really, I would imagine, people's wallets that's driving this.
3 or 4 weeks away from those subsidies, the lack of subsidies being locked in. And it seems like the Senate is running out of time to do anything about it. And it doesn't look like they're going to. Trump is telling them not to. And so that's where we're at this point. But let's just look at the inflation numbers and then we'll continue on. Now, this is the idea that the Senate could be in play is really in many respects nuts. But here is the thing that Democrats need to keep in mind. If you want to hold these things for more than 2 years, if you want to hold the House for more than 2 years or more than 2 years after 2028, you need to have an actual plan. You cannot all, let's put it this way. The Republicans cannot step on the rake if they don't have the rake. And when Democrats are in power, the Republicans don't have the rake anymore. Democrats, there is a they have to do more than Republicans, because that's the whole point of Democrats. Theoretically, the difference between Democrats and Republicans. And right now, the healthcare stuff is a complete disaster. And 10 years later, 12 years later, we now see the fundamental weakness of the ACA. And that is, it did not control costs in the way that it should have. B, those people who are influenced by the ACA, and I'm not talking the patient protection part of the bill, and I'm not talking about the expansion of Medicaid, is a narrow set of people in this country. And so if we're really going to deal with health insurance in this country, you need to present some form of single payer plan.
And on the patient protection part, I just think it's important to note that, like, while the ACA was really important with the pre-existing conditions piece and protecting people from that, we saw how health insurance companies were able to find other ways to deny care in the years that followed. And so it's not comprehensive enough, because they make money by denying you care. That is the incentive. And that's the reason that this middleman needs to be cut out.
All right. Let's just look a little bit at the inflation numbers and then let's
political groups here. How about what issues may be driving this?
Okay, yeah. So we say that independents are driving Trump's decline overall, but what is pushing independents and the rest of the electorate away from Donald Trump? Away from Donald Trump. John Berman, move out of this screen. Away from Donald Trump. Well, it has everything to do with inflation. It's the cost of living, baby. That is the name of the game. You go back to January, he was 3 points above water. This was the reason why that voters gave him a second term. You look at this. Look at this. Now, 34 points underwater. My goodness gracious, that is a 37-point move in the wrong direction.
All right. I mean, inflation, you know, if people, one of the things the Fed could do to fight inflation, if that were a concern, is they would raise interest rates right now. Right now, there's been an issue of whether they'll cut them or lower them after the mixed jobs report yesterday. What do the prediction markets say now?
Yeah, okay. So Donald Trump has been pushing. And you know what? The chance that the Fed Reserve in December cuts interest rates now up to 70%, because one of the Fed Reserve members said essentially there was still room for cuts. This will be welcome news for Donald Trump. Whether it ultimately, though, gets at his true problem, which in my opinion is the cost of living, I think a lot of economists would disagree that it would. But that.
So, I mean, that's the dilemma from the Fed's perspective. I don't necessarily think that a Fed rate cut is going to necessarily spur more inflation. I think, frankly, the immigration stuff that's happening, the tariffs and the uncertainty, creates an environment where I think a lot of corporations either are forced to raise prices or see an opportunity to raise prices and walk away with more profits.
Exactly.
I mean, it's hard for me to imagine that a quarter percent cut is going to, you know, spur that much more economic activity in this environment where everybody's just like, I have no idea what's going on.
I mean,
but we'll see.
We'll see. But we saw it, the lessons that these corporations took from the pandemic, which is that we can get away with whatever we want. Yep. And Trump is giving them every excuse, even if he rescinds these tariffs. What are they going to use as the excuse this time?
Couple of words from our sponsors. If you're dealing with hair issues, maybe it's thinning, maybe it's shedding. That's the problem, is that it's the shedding, and then you don't get it growing back, and that's where you get the thinning. But you're not sure what to do next. I totally get it. I've been there. Actually, I didn't really spend that much time there, I got to be honest, because we had Nutrafol in the office, and it was sort of more of like a lark. People know the backstory why we had in the office. They wanted to sponsor the program. They want us to try it out. At the time, nobody was interested. I had it in the office. I'm like, I'm starting to feel like I'm starting to thin a little bit up top, not so much around the gut. And so I tried it because I didn't want to take, drugs. Nutrafol is the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement. So I figured, why not? And I will tell you, it's not just hype. It's physician formulated. It is clinically tested. And like I say, even recommended by dermatologists. You can feel great about what you're putting into your body, since Nutrafol hair growth supplements are backed by peer-reviewed studies and NSF content certified, which is the gold standard and third-party certification for supplements. It's trusted by over 1.5 million people. And part of that reason is that many supplements will rely only on ingredient studies. Nutrafol clinically tests its final formulations, and to ensure their efficacy, they use a bunch of hair measurement tools, hair counts, pull tests to assess growth and quality and shedding and texture. Super easy to add Nutrafol to your daily routine. You can see thicker, stronger, faster growing hair with less shedding in 3 to 6 months with Nutrafol. For a limited time, Nutrafol offering you $10 off your first month subscription and free shipping. When you go to Nutrafol.com, enter the promo code TMR10. That's the letters TMR and the number 10. No spaces. Find out why Nutrafol is the best-selling hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com, spelled Nutrafol.com. Promo code TMR10. That's Nutrafol.com. Promo code TMR10. Description in the podcast and YouTube. I should say links in the podcast and YouTube description. Emma, OneSkin.
Yes, I would like to thank OneSkin for sponsoring today's episode. If you are like me, your skin needs some extra care this time of year between colder weather and the holidays fast approaching and, you know, in the summer, sometimes I like to lay out and I need to recover in the winter months. That's why I have continued to rely on OneSkin. I've talked about this before. I love the OS1 face, the OS1 eye. It's been invaluable in my daily routine, and it delivers a powerful skincare benefits, powerful longevity benefits, all in just a few simple steps. I love the texture of the cream. I love the fact that the eye cream in particular is lighter. And also sometimes eye cream can cause like tingling for me. The skin around my eyes can be a little bit sensitive, but not with OneSkin.
Tingling?
Yeah.
All right.
Skin around your eyes is a little more sensitive than other areas because it's just like kind of baby skin. And I really love how OneSkin's eye cream feels in particular. I wanted just a little bit more brightness, some more clarity, the ability to like recover a little bit from some sun damage. And OneSkin has been excellent so far on that front. At the core is their patented OS1 peptide, the first ingredient proven to target senescent cells, the root cause of wrinkles, crepiness, that's how you say it, right? And loss of elasticity, which are all key signs of skin aging. And these results have now been validated in 5 different clinical studies. I've been getting some compliments recently on my skin, shockingly. I think it was Francesca Fiorentini, a friend of the show, when I was out in L.A. saying, "Oh, your skin looks nice." And I said, "Thank you, my friend."
Julie's loving that stuff.
Yes. She's been telling me, too. And so OneSkin has been a huge part of that. OneSkin also just launched their limited edition holiday sets, including the Nightly Rewind gift set, which is one of those rare gifts that's both impressive and genuinely useful, providing an upgrade to anyone's nightly routine, featuring their best-selling face moisturizer, their new peptide lip mask, and a cool gua sha tool. Each component of the set is designed to work together as your body enters its natural nightly repair mode, helping renew skin at the cellular level for a stronger, smoother, more resilient skin. And that limited edition holiday set is pretty awesome if you want to give it as a gift. This season, don't just moisturize, support your skin at the cellular level with OneSkin. For a limited time, try OneSkin for 15% off using code MAJORITY at oneskin.co/majority. That's 15% off at oneskin.co/majority with code MAJORITY. After you purchase, they will ask you where you heard about them. Please help us and tell them the Majority Report sent you. Try OneSkin today, and we will have a link down below in the video episode description and also at majority.fm. Get 15% off OneSkin with the code MAJORITY at www.oneskin.co/majority.
www?
Yeah. You ever
so
heard
it's
of it?
On the World Wide Web.
It's on the World Wide
Web.
That's
I just wanted to make sure
it.
That
yes.
was the case.
Yeah.
Lastly, we got one other sponsor. This is like a life hack. I know gift giving is, I mean, frankly, it's horrible. Nobody likes to do it.
No. I like to do it.
Fox News says you shouldn't even do it.
Yeah.
I've got the greatest gift to give. And I gave this to my girlfriend's family, and I was all of a sudden like a hero. Aura frames. They are literally like the cheat code for winning the holidays. Super personal. Super, super easy to give, and something they will literally use every day. I'm talking your grandparents. I'm talking your parents. I'm talking your aunts, your uncles, your cousins, your kids. It doesn't matter. It works for everybody. Aura frames are digital frames. They give you unlimited free photo and video. All you got to do is you download the Aura app. It's super easy to use. You connect to Wi-Fi, obviously. You can upload all these pictures. There is a gift box included for every frame. So you're already there. And here's the thing. You can order it. You can preload the photos on it from afar. You understand what I'm saying here? You don't have to even see it. You order it. You get the code that the box is. It goes to grandma's house. It goes to your folks' house. It goes to whatever. Or you could bring it in person, of course, too.
You don't even got to open it.
You don't open it. You don't. It's all wrapped in plastic still. And you can upload the photos. So when they plug it in and they connect to Wi-Fi, and it's super easy to connect to Wi-Fi, too, the photos are there. Photos and videos. And with sound. Super easy. People love this. And you've got 12 kids in your family. Okay, you give it to your parents. All 12 kids can get an app and feed it in there. And then you get, then it becomes a war. Who's going to put more photos on there? Whose photos does mom and dad like more?
Yeah.
That's basically what happens. But that's like everything at the holidays, I feel like. Don't wait. Win the holidays right now with Aura Frames. For a limited time, visit AuraFrames.com. Get $45 off of Aura's best-selling Carver Matte Frames, named number one by Wirecutter. Use the promo code MAJORITY at checkout. That's A-U-R-A, frames.com, promo code MAJORITY. This is an exclusive Black Friday, Cyber Monday deal. It's their best of the year, so order now before it ends. Support the show by mentioning us at checkout. I'm telling you. You will win it. We'll put the link in the podcast and YouTube descriptions. All right, let's go to this. I have mixed feelings about this because I found the video itself a little bit tedious. I don't know why you need to be a former military or a former CIA agent to say that you should follow the Constitution.
You sit this one out. You don't understand.
Huh?
As a vet, you just don't understand.
I don't get it.
P-
Patriots are in control.
But
I like the idea of Brian being interspersed in this video for some reason. It's like eight Democratic lawmakers and Brian being like, you don't have to follow orders that
you don't
agree with. My fellow constituents,
I want to remind you.
The flag is upside down.
It's me, Senator Alyssa Slotkin, and me, Brian Vokey.
This Brian.
Me, Brian. I didn't...
I've
never
patriot.
Heard a title. oppositional defiance disorder is not just is patriotic.
You can weaponize it in both directions.
Exactly. But the point still remains, despite the fact that I have a little bit of icky, ooey feeling in this video on some level, because, of course, they banded together with fellow vets and fellow vets of
intelligence.
But the point being, and maybe there's National Guardsmen out there. Maybe there are national security people who would be moved by this more than they would if I was to say it.
Mm-hmm.
But we are, there is certainly a legitimate concern over the course of the next, I have a concern over the course of the next 11 to 12 months that in their desperation to hold on to power, the Trump administration is going to do some stuff that is extra constitutional, as it were. And so these people put out this video as a way of basically starting to get the conversation in there. I mean, look, we are on the precipice of having to watch whether federal agents or National Guardsmen will cross a line and say, hey, wait, this is not cool. But here, watch.
I'm Senator Alyssa Slotkin.
Senator Mark Kelly.
Representative Chris DeLuzio.
Congresswoman Maggie Goodlander.
Representative Chrissy Houlihan.
Congressman Jason Crow.
I was a captain in the United States Navy.
Former CIA officer.
Former Navy.
Former paratrooper and Army Ranger.
Former intelligence officer.
Former Air Force.
We want to speak directly to members of the military
and the intelligence community
who take risks each day
to keep Americans safe.
We know you are under enormous stress and pressure right now.
Americans trust their military.
But that trust is at risk.
This administration is pitting our uniformed military
and intelligence community professionals
against American citizens.
Like us, you all swore an oath
to protect and defend this Constitution.
Right now, the threats to our Constitution aren't just coming from abroad,
but from right here at home.
Our laws are clear. You can refuse illegal orders.
You can refuse illegal orders.
You must refuse illegal orders.
No one has to carry out orders that violate the law
or our Constitution.
We know this is hard
and that it's a difficult time to be a public servant.
But whether you're serving in the CIA,
the Army,
or Navy,
the Air Force,
your vigilance is critical.
And know that we have your back.
Because now, more than ever,
the American people need you. We need you to stand up for our laws,
our Constitution,
and who we are as Americans. Don't give up.
Don't give up.
Don't give up.
Don't give up the ship.
Now, we just had a federal court say that Donald Trump's deployment of the National Guard for mundane crime fighting in Washington, D.C. is illegal and has enjoined them from doing it. Now, I don't know if it's going to get turned over or not. But when Donald Trump is training squads, 500 National Guardsmen per state as a rapid deployment force, there's reason to be a little bit on alert and concerned.
Yes. I mean, well, a silly point is I like when how twice in a row it was like Kelly then Slotkin who said you can refuse illegal orders. And then they cut to Jason Crow saying you must do it. You must refuse illegal orders. It's just maybe they have a little CIA military
brainwashing. Like
I know. And then Brian comes on. You will refuse illegal orders.
You already have.
It's like it's the parallax view.
Yes.
Footage.
But I actually think it's somewhat important in the sense that, like, we've been saying this, I think, for a little bit, is that the Democrats have to probably remind some of these people that there's a chance they're back in power at some point. And like, if you have an off ramp, if you like don't, if you think an order is illegal, like, we can protect you. It's kind of the reverse of what we're seeing from Pritzker, is like, we will prosecute you if you violate right. these laws. Don't think this is forever.
Right. The idea that there's some accountability out there, and if this is a way of basically sort of laying down a marker and saying there is a line that you can cross, we're aware of it, and if you're going to do this, you better hope that the Republicans are in power forever and ever. Here is Donald Trump responding on Truth Out. Now, Washington Examiner writes, Democratic veterans in Congress urge service members to refuse unspecified unlawful orders. Now, this is worded in such a way as if it's like saying specifically refuse orders, as opposed to Democratic veterans in Congress remind service members to refuse to follow unlawful orders.
Yeah, your oath is to the Constitution.
Exactly. Yeah. Which is a fairly more sort of like mundane and but important and not coincidental in terms of this era. Donald Trump says, this is really bad. Now, for some reason, bad is not capitalized, but dangerous is. So this is really bad.
It's more dangerous than bad.
Comma, and dangerous to our country. Their words cannot be allowed to stand. Again, remember the words are, do not follow illegal orders. Keep going. Seditious behavior from traitors. Lock them up? Question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark. President DJT. And then
he's illiterate. So funny.
Well, I mean, it's
there more? Didn't
Epstein,
he do two?
More. Yeah, okay. Epstein also would have a bunch of errors in his thing, and people say it's a power move, but for Trump, it's just idiocy.
So then
they're idiots. They're powerful idiots.
Yeah,
that's what a powerful move.
Now, isn't so then Trump some podcast? Guy whose avatar is like a is that a like a
I believe
German?
That's Iron Cross.
Yeah, Iron Cross.
That's the thing that made Crusade me stop wearing thing. My Motorhead T-shirt right, okay. about 10 years ago.
And they reply. Hang them, George Washington would, and Donald Trump retruthed it.
Yeah.
Now, first off, I don't have any explanation why Iron Cross would be speaking like Yoda. Hang them, George Washington would. Nice!
Wait, do it again.
I was feeling it.
That was good, Brian.
Hang them, George Washington would.
Yes!
And then Trump again says, put this up here, seditious behavior punishable by death.
So Steve Miller's in the room.
Yes. Steve Miller is like, you're on to something.
Spitting.
And look, as a political matter, like, you know, this is a good way for Trump to get a little bit of distraction from the crap show that he has been involved in over the past couple of days. I don't think it's going to work. It really just entertains people. Largely, it seems like, but Caroline Leavitt was asked about this, and they are purposefully conflating a couple of things in terms of the Supreme Court, what the Supreme Court ruled while Donald Trump was out of office, which is that the president has immunity from anything he does, criminal prosecution of anything he does, as long as he does it as part of his official duties as president. Which is not to say that it's impossible for him to issue illegal orders. It just means to say that even though it's illegal, he is protected from prosecution. But the people who respond to those illegal orders and the illegality of those orders still exists. It just means he can't be held accountable.
Right.
And it means that if you follow it, you will be. But here, Carolyn Leavitt tries to sort of muddy the waters
with
there.
Her machine gun lips.
Yeah, I love the way she moves those lips.
They are are literally saying to 1.3 million active duty service members not to defy the chain of command, not to follow lawful orders. Every single...
Pause it for a second.
Yeah.
They literally, we just watched it, and they literally said, don't follow unlawful orders. But she's going to try and make the argument that there's no such thing.
But even her making that slip, she knows that if she says they're supposed to just follow orders, everyone's alarm would go off. So she has to put lawful in there.
Right. Well, and also, but the premise of her argument also is just the Nixonian, if the president does it, that means it's not illegal, right? Any order he issues by definition cannot be. And so that was a national scandal back in the day. Now it's just modus operandi.
And active duty service members not to defy the chain of command, not to follow lawful orders.
Actually,
every single
refuse an illegal order, which
but
is
they are but they're suggesting justice. They're suggesting, Nancy, that the president has given illegal orders, which he has not. Every single order that is given to this United States military by this commander in chief and through this chain of command, through the Secretary of War, is lawful, and the courts have proven that. This administration has an unparalleled record at the Supreme Court because we are following the laws. We don't defy court orders. We do things by the books. And to suggest and encourage that active duty service members defy the chain of command is a very dangerous thing for sitting members of Congress to do. And they should be held accountable. And that's what the president wants to see. They are literally
hung
saying
accountable.
To 1.3...
Hung so, accountable, more like.
I mean, they're really having to dance around this. But and it's unclear. Like, you know, I don't know if Donald Trump does anything other than just sort of react, like, with his lizard brain. And then we just watch the backfilling by everybody around him to sort of justify what he does. They have the benefit of having absolutely no shame. So it may often come off of like, wow, nobody, the fact that she could get up there and try and justify this and tell these lies is sort of indicative. They must have gotten together and planned this out and done that. It's really just an absence of shame, because that's what, when professionals get out there and lie like this, it's that they are aware that everybody's going to know that they're lying, and it makes it harder for them to do it. It's just sort of like a human reaction. But these people have so little shame that that's not there anymore, and that's why they're able to do what they do. It really is just, at the end of the day, a certain amount of shame. And I think just sort of like they live in a different ecosystem where if it doesn't matter what you have to do to get past this certain, just move the chains, essentially, as you march down the field is really the only agenda they have.
I mean, I don't want to also, like, trivialize it too much. I mean, I think Slotkin is by far from my favorite Democrat, but she's apparently now has 24/7 security from Capitol Police because of this, like, Capitol Police having to protect these lawmakers from the president and from the actions that he takes and like what he inspires, the death threats that she's going to get. I mean, we saw how the January 6th rioters reacted to Donald Trump's words. I mean, the way that they stormed into Nancy Pelosi's office, didn't they defecate on her desk?
Yeah.
And like, I mean, the AOC was literally thought she might be sexually assaulted, was hiding in the Capitol. And this is because of the rhetoric of Donald Trump. So it's easy to be blasé about it. It's easy to be used to it. But this like kind of leadership does matter. And this has deleterious effects that can end up in violence.
I mean, she's from a state, Slotkin
right.
is, where wasn't the governor almost
yes.
kidnapped?
Subject to a kidnapping plot,
yeah.
Right? There needs to be people have no shame or responsibility anymore, but this is going to have an impact in some way or another.
Now, the flip side of all this is that there is just a tremendous amount of incompetence by the Trump administration in everything they do. I mean, if you're going to have your country subject to a fascist takeover, may your fascists be as stupid and as incompetent as the ones we have. That will be the saving grace. As you know, Donald Trump pushed for a push for Texas gerrymandering And this started off a gerrymander war, essentially. And the idea was he's so desperate to maintain the House at the midterms, knowing that it's going to be tough to keep control of the House. Right now they have, what, a three-vote margin?
I think so.
They wanted Texas to gerrymander to pick up 5-6 seats, I think it was, maybe
five.
More. And this started off a gerrymander war, and there was a lot more opportunities for Republicans to gerrymander across the country because most Democratic states had already passed laws saying that we're only going to do independent commissions to draw lines because we want to keep it relatively fair. They could have gotten away with this in Texas, and they still very well may. But it's going to be a lot more difficult because the way that the Trump administration did this, they made these Texas gerrymander maps completely racialized. And it's literally the one thing they shouldn't have done if they wanted this to stand. The DOJ sent a letter. I'm reading now from the decision issued by the judge in this case. It was a couple of days ago, but this is worth hearing some of this language. DOJ sent a letter to the governor and attorney general of Texas making the legally incorrect assertion that four congressional districts in Texas were unconstitutional because they were coalition districts, majority non-white districts in which no single racial group constituted a 50% majority. In the letter, the DOJ threatened legal action if Texas didn't immediately dismantle and redraw these districts, a threat based entirely on their racial makeup. Notably, the DOJ letter targeted only majority non-white districts. So this is from the first couple of paragraphs of the decision. The public perception of this case is that it's about politics. Oh, we should say at the top of the introduction, there's a quote that the trial judge wrote, or I should say circuit judge wrote. The way to stop discrimination on the basis of race is to stop discriminating on the basis of race. This is a quote from Chief Justice John Roberts. Now, this is a quote that he used in dismantling the Voting Rights Act by saying, like, you should be colorblind. And that's the way you end racism, is just pretend like it hasn't existed up until this moment and just keep pretending like that's not there.
But using his own words against him is a really interesting choice by this three-judge panel, or the two judges but one I think was a Biden appointee, one maybe
was a Trump appointee.
Oh, the one was a Trump appointee.
Yep.
Okay, there you go.
And and so using John Roberts' own words, the public perception of this case is that it's about politics. To be sure, politics played a role in drawing the 2025 map, but it's much more than just politics. Substantial evidence shows that Texas racially gerrymandered the 2025 map. Here's why. Earlier this year, President Trump began urging Texas to redraw its U.S. House map to create five additional Republican seats. Lawmakers reportedly met that request to redistrict on purely partisan grounds with apprehension. When the governor announced his intent to call a special legislative session, he didn't even place redistricting on the legislative agenda. But when the Trump administration reframed its request as a demand to redistrict congressional seats based on their racial makeup, Texas lawmakers immediately jumped on board. On July 7th, Harbert Deland, the head of the Civil Rights Division at the Department of Justice, DOJ, sent a letter, the DOJ letter, to the governor and attorney general of Texas. This is what I read above, making the legally incorrect assertion that four congressional districts in Texas were unconstitutional because they were coalition districts, majority non-white districts in which no single racial group constituted a 50% majority. In the letter, DOJ threatened legal action if Texas didn't immediately dismantle and redraw these districts, a threat based entirely on their racial makeup. Remember that John Roberts quote. Notably, the DOJ letter targeted only majority non-white districts. Any mention of majority white districts, which DOJ presumably would have also targeted if its aims were partisan rather than racial, was conspicuously absent. So they could have gone further, but when they start to bring up racial intent, that's like literally the only way that this, like, they could have had these exact same lines drawn. But the question is were they drawn with an intent to be racially biased? And the fact that they acted upon this of a racially biased agenda gives up the ghost. 2 days later, citing the DOJ letter, the governor added redistricting to the special session's legislative agenda. In doing so, the governor explicitly directed the legislature to draw a new U.S. House map to resolve DOJ's concerns. In other words, the governor explicitly directed the legislature to redistrict based on race. That's literally the only thing you can't do now with what the Supreme Court has ruled at this point.
Yep.
The legislature adopted those racial objectives. I'm skipping ahead now. The map ultimately passed by the legislature and signed by the governor achieved all but one of the racial objectives that the DOJ demanded. So in other words, they were hoisted by their own petard in this case. The Trump administration, if they had not made it about racial motivations, but instead political motivations, the Supreme Court would have let that slide. Now, we still don't know. The Supreme Court could very well, but in the past, Supreme Court has ruled that states cannot allow race to predominate when drawing lines, but has given them free rein to use political calculations. So if Texas had said, or if the DA judge just shut its mouth and said nothing about it, and Texas has said, we're doing this because we want Republicans to win more, that would have been okay. But because they said, ooh, we don't we're giving too much power away to brown people, they screwed themselves. And this is the thing. It's just, and now it's quite possible that California will still go ahead with their redistricting. And this entire war, Indiana is backing off, I guess, their own push for redistricting.
Right, delaying
it. Maryland may go forward. This entire Republican-initiated redistricting war, where Democrats had to be pushed kicking and screaming into redistricting, may end up netting Democrats another 7-8 seats. But if the Supreme Court reverses and says it's okay now to racially gerrymander, Texas still may have a problem because, again, we mentioned this in the wake of the last election. The entire we were told that this election was a realignment. I remember this from when I went into college. The Reagan, the second Reagan election was supposedly a realignment, and it probably was, where you had a bunch of more sort of like racist Democrats shift over to the Republican Party. And the argument was that young people, Latino people, maybe even black people, there was a realignment going on. They were following Donald Trump. All those numbers have reversed. And so the gerrymander was based on those Latino votes in Texas. And it may end up also costing them seats in Texas. So they may be screwed either way now in Texas. Either they lose their gerrymander and Democratic states go ahead with it anyways, or they keep their gerrymander and end up losing more more seats than they would have originally.
Just a quick note on that. I'm not sure if you saw that there was the third judge on that panel was a Reagan appointee, and he like published this insane opinion in response to it, in which he invoked George Soros no fewer than 17 times. I'm reading from Mark Joseph Stern here, derided the plaintiff's expert witness as a Soros operative, etc. So just to give people a sense of like what the right-wing conservative legal minds actually are bandying about in their heads.
I read that thing, and it honestly reads like a guy who is teetering on the edge of reality. It was like a series of jokes that he put in there that were sort of like...
I mean, it doesn't sound like a legal opinion. It sounds like a blog
post. No, he started
post.
It off by saying, look, I've got a bunch of jumbled thoughts, and I'm just going to dribble this out on the page. And that's exactly what he did. And they're all over the place. And remember, the Reagan era was particularly like hostile to black people. I mean, that was really the big thing. You know, Reagan started his campaign, the welfare queen stuff, but he launched his national campaign just outside of Philadelphia, Mississippi, where at the Neshoba County Fair, just miles from where those three civil rights workers were famously killed by the KKK, and cited states' rights as one of the things that he was running his election for.
Those were the folks that were the movie Mississippi Burning was based on, right?
Yep. And of course, John Roberts, who would go on to be Supreme Court Justice and oversee the dismantling the Voting Rights Act, was trying to dismantle the Voting Rights Act as a lawyer in Ronald Reagan's Department of Justice 30 years earlier. So, but this is where we're at with this. And lastly, as we make this case for incompetence, I don't care about James Comey. The myriad of issues I have with James Comey, going back to his work with this guy. Just
only God, no other kings. Let the mighty.
Back during the Bush years, he worked with Ashcroft's DOJ, and they spent a lot of time spying on Muslims.
And do you remember earlier this year he posted a like photo on Instagram of seashells that spelled the numbers 8647?
Yeah, he was a real
like,
tough guy.
I got that tattooed on me.
To get attention. Like he's like, oh, it was just a nice like numerical sequence that I'm. I mean, dude, are you an influencer? Are you 16 years old, or are you like James Comey, a former FBI director?
He both was responsible for Trump's election in many respects. Whatever. That's not the point. We should not be weaponizing the DOJ in the way that we have. They have attempted to indict, and I say attempted because it looked like they had indicted James Comey. They went to a grand jury over the course of this week. They could not find, just to be clear, going back a little bit, they could not find any professional prosecutors in the Department of Justice who was willing to bring charges in front of a grand jury to try and get an indictment, because there was so little there. And so Trump's DOJ hires, what's her first name, Halligan?
Lindsay.
Lindsay Halligan, who apparently was like an insurance lawyer or something to that effect, to prosecute the case. There were two issues this week. One was on Wednesday and one was on Friday. Wednesday and one was on Thursday. On Wednesday, she was chastised two things. One, for telling the grand jury stuff that was wrong as a matter of law. Right. So you can have like a matter of facts, and, you know, prosecutors always sort of play a little bit with that. And grand jury is very easy to get an indictment out of. But the grand jury would ask questions and she would say, well, we don't have the answers to those, but you'll hear James Comey testify and you'll figure it out during the case. But if you're a defendant, you're not obligated to testify. There's something called the Fifth Amendment. So if there were facts that they felt like needed to be addressed, it is, as a matter of law, incorrect for her to say this. There was one or two other things that came up. But then in the course of examining this, it became clear that the indictment she filed with the court was actually never voted upon by the grand jury. She couldn't get the original indictment that she wanted. When she found out that they had rejected it, she rejiggered it a little bit and then went to the foreman and one or two other members of the grand jury, like, you know, like after hours, like at 7:30 at night, got them to sign off on it and submitted that to the court. And I don't know, like, I don't think it's lay people. We can fully understand how completely bat crap crazy that is.
I mean, it seems deliberately deceptive in a way that should be illegal.
Oh,
I understand that we can talk about their incompetence, but like that is absolutely insane. You basically trying to get around the process by submitting an indictment that was altered but not approved by the grand jury to the court.
Well, it was approved by representatives of the grand jury.
Because talking to their wives in the parking lot.
2 years ago, I was on a grand jury, heard a number of cases. The main thing that they're trying to do is cross all those T's and dot the I's, saying the jury heard this, they were instructed this way and not that way.
Yeah,
like that is all they're doing in those rooms.
I should say, she also argued that the grand jury did not have to decide whether there was even probable cause to indict Comey. This is not the case.
You sure about that?
As a matter of law, because she said the government might have even more evidence that we're going to do a trial. So it's like basically saying, like, you don't need to have probable cause to indict Comey. You need to have possible probable cause to indict him. Like, it's possible there could be more probable cause, and then you can't. So these are like bad jury instructions, you know, that people would normally appeal. But these are basic things for prosecutors. And then Halligan, the judge, had to address another motion. And that other motion was that the Comey's defense was saying that, like, this is not even a real prosecution. It's being brought about because of bias by the president, the government in this instance, either one. And that this is specifically a vindictive prosecution. And so the judge, a guy, Nachmanoff, I can't remember exactly. The judge basically asked her, are you a puppet or are you a stalking horse?
Mm-hmm.
And she got incredibly offended. Went to the New York Post and said the judge needs to be removed because he's being personally insulting. She did not know, which apparently all prosecutors know in terms of a vindictive prosecution, that those are not quite terms that are state of art, but they are terms that are in the case law about vindictive prosecutions. So there's a test as to whether a prosecution is vindictively prosecuted, and it's literally a defendant claiming vindictive prosecution must show that, one, the prosecutor harbored genuine animus toward the defendant or was prevailed upon to bring the charges by another with animus, people follow that, right? Like, if I'm a prosecutor and I don't like Brian, I'm going to charge you with jaywalking or something. Or maybe Matt is like, I don't like Brian. Sam, bring charges of jaywalking against Brian. By another with animus such that the prosecutor could be considered a stalking horse, a vehicle to carry out this vindictive stuff, or a puppet to carry out this vindictive stuff. But she didn't know this because she's not familiar with prosecution or any of this stuff. Here is a ABC News report on this.
The case against former FBI Director James Comey may be in jeopardy after prosecutors acknowledged a possible problem with the way it was presented to the grand jury. Under questioning by the judge, Lindsay Halligan, the inexperienced prosecutor President Trump handpicked for the job but who has never tried a criminal case, admitted she never showed the entire grand jury the indictment it was supposed to have approved. The disclosure silenced the shocked courtroom. Comey's lawyer said the charges must be dismissed. Prosecutors downplayed the misstep. President Trump chose Halligan, his former personal lawyer with an insurance background, to replace a career prosecutor he had previously appointed, but who refused to charge Comey. Sources told ABC News the initial decision not to charge was included in a memo. When the judge asked about that memo, Halligan's partner said Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche ordered him not to discuss it. Comey pleaded not guilty to making a false statement and obstructing Congress.
I have great confidence in the federal judicial system. And I'm innocent.
Get off Instagram.
So let's have a trial.
His lawyers call the case vindictive, pointing to Trump's social media post demanding prosecution of his political enemies, writing, "We can't delay any longer." If this is not a direction to prosecute, Comey's lawyer argued, I'd really be at a loss to say what is. But prosecute.
I mean, the point being is there's a lot of things that incompetent people can do with malicious intent. But there are some things that they can't do because they're so freaking incompetent. This is like incompetence. I mean, the idea that they were going to get away with the grand jury not signing off on the indictment and they were pretending that they were going to is...
It's close enough.
I just think that, like, you...
It's literally like what a kid would do resubmitting an assignment that they'd submitted for another class.
After they clearly looked at the answers of their neighbor.
It's unbelievable.
It's just... It really is amazing that she thought she was going to get away with this. And do we have more? Is this
just a little bit more on her. This is her talking about a museum slavery exhibit.
Oh, this is her.
Now, this is before she's appointed the job of prosecuting the former FBI chief. Like, this is not a small prosecution. Yeah. You may want to start off small. Like, I got this guy for jaywalking, and his name is Brian. And
it's like your first at-bat.
I still feel like I would win.
Right. Yeah.
It's like having a T-ball player go up against Shohei Ohtani for his first at-bat. Exactly.
Here she is in full drag, I guess.
Yeah, I think the fact that we had our country... was involved in slavery is awful. No one thinks otherwise. But what I saw when I was going through the museums personally was an overemphasis on slavery. Mm-hmm. And I think there should be more of an overemphasis on how far we've come since slavery. Our country is a country of progress, and it's the greatest country in the world. And we should be able to take our kids, our students through the Smithsonian and feel proud when we leave. There's a lot of history to our country, both positive and negative, but we need to keep moving forward. We can't just keep focusing on the negative. All it does is divide us, and we really need to
pause it for 1 second. So wait a second. We need to move forward when we look at history.
At the History Museum.
Hey, it seems so just like caught up in the past.
It's so dated in here.
Why feel unhappy at any museum at all, right? They should convert the Holocaust Remembrance Museum into like some sort of Disney
like
ride.
Trampoline room, right, House like, of Air, whatever. Right, bounce around.
Right. Like a spaceship or something like that. Make it really cool and kid friendly.
I went to the Holocaust Museum and I'm thinking to myself, there's no Seinfeld there.
Yeah.
Like, and nobody's talking about, like...
I know.
What about, like, the Catskills? Like, why can't we go in and, like, see, like, the Catskills and, you know, like, the Seinfeld stuff or the Jews who were involved in some, like, research about stuff?
All those shoes that were there to represent all of the people that were killed and exterminated in the Holocaust, why don't we replace them with, like, Air Jordans to remind people of how far America has come?
I mean, surely there must have been some Jews involved in getting the whole Air Jordan thing happening.
Totally.
Why don't we emphasize that instead of the
sad
past?
Such a bummer. Feeling sad. I like to feel happy.
I go to museums to feel joy.
She's making a pretty good argument here, though. This is you get a sense of why she is now one of the top prosecutors in the government.
Love her.
Does is divide us, and we really need to unite the country and focus on all the positive as we approach America's 250th birthday.
Yeah.
That was her application.
I think she'd be great.
Yeah. Go take on the FBI director.
Folks, that's it for us today. Reminder, it's your support that makes the show possible. You can become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. When you do, you not only get the free show free of commercials. And these days, we got a lot of ads because it's, you know, getting near Christmas time. This is like it's when everybody dumping their advertising budget. Which I'm not complaining. I'm just saying,
yeah.
You don't have to listen to those commercials if you become a member at jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, justcoffee.coop, fair trade coffee, hot chocolate. Use the coupon code majority, get 10% off. They're a co-op. They're in Madison, Wisconsin. The coffee is great. And you can get the Majority Report blend on top of getting a discount for 10% off with the code majority. Check out the AM Quickie. 3 times a week, free email in your email box at 9 a.m. With the top news stories from a decidedly left perspective with two great writers, Corey Pine and Whitney. Whitney's killing it over at the Prospect.
Yep.
Whitney Wimbush is, let me just go, a couple of things that she's just written about. Like today, health insurance costs spike. She's been writing about a bunch of stuff in New York, too. Where's this? Justice Dems pick longtime organizer. Take Harlem. She's all over the place there. So check it out. AM Quickie, for a couple of bucks a month, you can get the email 5 times a week. Check it out. Also, join our Discord if you want to get involved in organizing. You want to, and I should say this. I made a call for people who can make whistles on their 3D printers. Mm-hmm. I feel like 98% of our audience apparently have large-scale industrial 3D printers because we got so many emails that I was like a deer in the headlights. I'm like, I can't wait. I don't know what we're going to do about this. So we're going to try and maybe, I don't know. In a perfect world, what we'd be able to do is somehow marshal people's ability to make these whistles and get them to rapid response groups all around the country. We're working on that. But if somebody wants to, I don't know, somebody wants to sort of organize that type of thing, we can provide you with contacts for that. And that would be a great thing to do. I mean, you know, the whistles aren't too expensive, but they very helpful for people around the country because.
Oh, yeah.
But we're working on that. It's, you know, we don't have like a. It's not like we got people sitting around the office who were like, hey, what's your job here? I don't know. I'm just,
yeah,
I just come in. So
the whistles were so effective in Chicago. You remember that school that got tear gassed? They were blowing those whistles. And then there was hundreds of people in front of that school in like a moment's notice.
They're very, very effective. And they're also good at just like communicating to other people. Like, there it is. Matt, what's happening? I see what it is. I got just a suggestion somebody just sent. You should have someone design an MR whistle STL, that's the 3D file that is printed. Just have your logo inset into the file, then offer the file for free, and people print it. Yes, but then what we got to do is we got to get the the whistles to the right place and figure out some type of clearinghouse for them. But we'll work on that. Matt, Left Reckoning in Jacobin today.
This morning, new Jacobin show with Brendan James of the Blowback Podcast, a really great guest to have on to talk about Dick Cheney dying. I wish we had known that Maddow was going to be at the funeral because we would have probably thrown that picture up. Robin Wansley, a socialist member from Ward 2 in Minneapolis City Council, talking about forming a socialist caucus so people like Jacob Fry don't get to take credit for the good things that socialists are passing at the municipal level. So two great interviews. Check that out and go subscribe to it after we're done with the Majority Report today.
Fun half. We're going to take phone calls, I think. See you in a minute. 3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second. The Majority Report. Emma, welcome to the program.
Hey.
Matt!
Who?
Fun.
What is up, everyone?
Fun.
Nomi Key.
You did it!
Fun.
Let's go, Brandon!
Fun.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today!
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women.
Stop talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But, dude, you want to smoke this?
7-8? Yes.
Hi, me? Is this me?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello? Is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
Oh, I'm going to go for a walk.
You libertarians.
They're so stupid, though.
Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge met.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say.
857-210-3501.
One-half.
3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion.
Sold.
It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this.
Poop.
You can call it satire. Sam goes, it's satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt.
Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the wheat being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, Sundial Guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled,
wow,
folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock, we're already late, and the guy's being a dick, so screw him. Sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye. We are back. Sam Cedar, Emma Viglin, just heating up her coffee, getting ready for the Friday fun half. That's right, ladies and gentlemen, we do have a microwave
on
premises and part of the commissary. We
Sam finally trusts them.
But,
well, I'm on the fence still.
I keep it far away from me. I never use it.
I sleep with a microwave, so teach their own.
We had talked about in the first half of the program of the incredible incompetence by the Trump administration, particularly in the legal arena. Then there's also some instances where it's not necessarily incompetence. It is nefariousness. And also the fact that you have a legal apparatus or an apparatus in the government broadly that is trying to protect a mad king from what we don't know. We really don't know what's in the Epstein files. It's quite clear there's stuff in there that Donald Trump does not want to have out. Now, is it that Donald Trump is a pedophile? Don't know. Is it that Donald Trump was an FBI asset and was, getting away with all sorts of crimes? Don't know. Is it that Donald Trump is just a loser and he's embarrassed by something? We just don't know. Here is, we know that the House passed a bill the other day to release all the Epstein files. And then John Thune apparently did not want to mess around with it. I think maybe Mike Johnson thought that it was going to get stopped there, but maybe not. Don't know. But it sailed through the Senate as well. And in fact, Donald Trump signed it. So, whoa, we should be able to get the files now.
It's in 30 days, basically. We're supposedly going to get these files, I think, around December 18th.
And, you know, the irony is that if Donald Trump had just ordered the files to be released, they could have been released. You didn't need legislation to do it. So it's sort of like silly, but okay.
Well, he whipped votes. He tried really hard to kill it, which says it all, and was unsuccessful in getting his party to bend the knee, which I think is like the most significant development in terms of weakening this fascist administration in quite a while, and it was all self-inflicted.
And Mike Johnson even like kept the House out of commission for 6 weeks to avoid this. So what is plan B for them? Well, I think we know that Pam Bondi delivered plan B at the podium of the White House the other day, or I should say the Department of Justice. And it sort of feels like she didn't quite have a full story to provide.
Attorney General, do you mean that you will provide all the files by 30 days?
We will follow the law. The law passed both chambers last evening. It has not yet been signed, but we will continue to follow the law again while protecting victims, but also providing maximum transparency.
Madam Attorney General, the DOJ statement earlier this year saying that the files would not release mentioned the fact that the review of the documents and the evidence did not suggest that any additional investigation of third parties was warranted. What changed since then that you launched this investigation?
Oh, pause it for a second. Incidentally, hold on. I just want to remind you that the legislation also has an out. There doesn't have to be the release of information that might in any way jeopardize national security or an ongoing investigation. And weirdly, they've decided to launch an ongoing investigation.
Huh.
And so this is Pam Bondi being asked by this guy. You months ago said that there was nothing left to investigate. What could you be investigating? Just go back a little bit here. A couple more seconds. A little more. Yeah.
And the evidence did not suggest that any additional investigation of third parties was warranted. What changed since then that you launched this investigation?
Information that has come for information. There's information that new information, additional information. And again, we will continue to follow the law to investigate any leads. If there are any victims, we encourage all victims to come forward and we will continue to provide maximum transparency under the law.
Under the law. What was it? Let's play it again, because I just want to be clear. Information came forward, new information.
New information happened.
What could that be?
At some point. I won't say when and what it is.
New information just coincidentally came upon us as soon as it was signed into law.
Hmm.
Let's play this again. I mean, this is, you would think, like, even she, I think, knows that she's lying so much that she can't even say these words, because these are not complicated words. New information's come out.
Can I just say the word information?
Yeah.
Do I have to put words around information, or can I just say information?
New information.
Extent that you launched this investigation.
Information that has come for information. There's information that new information, additional information, and again, we will continue
to
follow the law to investigate any leads. If there are any victims, we encourage all victims to come forward, and we will continue to provide maximum transparency.
It's interesting to me. Well, one, all of this information is making my head spin.
New information.
It's pretty disgusting.
All information.
It's really gross that they keep doing this thing where they talk about the victims. The victims are telling you what they want. They don't even want any redactions in order to protect themselves from being re-traumatized, because they need this information out there, because the amount of powerful people that are implicated or who have hurt them and assaulted them, they can't put their names out there without having that information out there for risk of severe legal penalty and lawsuits and things like that. So don't speak for the victims as if you have their best interests in mind. I mean, it is incredibly disgusting. And I think part of why she's squirming so much is that she knows that Trump is trying to get her to do things on this front in this 30-day period before they have to release these files. That could set her up for future prosecution. If any of these DOJ officials help Trump out and participate in this cover-up, and they do something illegally in terms of these documents to scrub them, that is not that violates the law that was just signed by Trump, you know, unwillingly, obviously. They could be in real legal jeopardy because they're participating in a cover-up on the president's behalf. Where have we seen this before?
Aside from that, information, new information should be a drop. I think maybe we have a clue as to what that information could be.
Mm-hmm.
I'm looking around for the new information. Mm-hmm. Don't remember any new information coming forward per se. Although, coincidentally, the day before, Pam Bondi says there's information, new information. Information's come forward.
Appeared. In the wild.
Andrew Looney, who was Prince Andrew's biographer, in a leaked video, provides potential new information.
Hmm.
So here we are with him in Mar-a-Lago, as you see, with Epstein. Sorry, can you see okay? Epstein, a woman called Gwendolyn Beck, who Andrew took to the island, and Melania. I had various references in my book to Melania Trump. Epstein had actually been her lover before Trump, but Trump didn't like that in the book, so he ordered it to be taken out of the book. After about 60,000 copies had been printed. So it seemed to be a pretty pointless gesture, but anyway, my publishers did it, but I keep spreading the word.
There it is. That video leaked. Maybe.
Could be.
Well, it would be irresponsible not to speculate as to what the new information could be, because we clearly don't know. Information returned. It came back. We'll see. I have a feeling in 29 days, we're going to find out that they can't release it except for unless it's fully redacted.
There was like a weird post in the Washington Post where there was an opinion piece kind of poo-pooing the Epstein files. Also, Ezra Klein had a piece a few months ago about how, you know, basically the Epstein files, I forget exactly.
He said that he thought that Epstein's trafficking was a distinct enterprise from anything else.
It mostly didn't overlap.
Yeah, I'll read the sentence quickly. It said, when he said on the episode, if you force me to give my best guess, I think this guy had a lot of powerful friends and that he was a predator and a pedophile, and those sides of his life were mostly separate in terms of, like, sexual perversion and predatory nature was separate from his powerful friends, where there is literally zero evidence to suggest that. And you have to think about how, I know Reid Hoffman, we don't know the extent of his relationship with Epstein, but his closeness with Ezra Klein likely plays a role in perhaps some of the motivated reasoning here. I'm not trying to be too conspiratorial, but I am trying to say that, like, there is about to be some circling of the wagons of a certain class of people on this front, because, like, when we're talking about class solidarity amongst this very, very elite group of folks, they either they're implicated in it and they don't want it out there, or they don't want to set the precedent that this kind of activity could be subjected to sunlight. And I find it very fascinating that we see some of this kind of preemptive defensiveness from some of these papers and people high up in media.
This is to just further that point you're making, this is a an excerpt from Yanis Varoufakis's Adults in the Room, when he met with Larry Summers. I can't remember the context in which he met, but Larry Summers said to him at one point, so Yanis, he said, okay, here it is. Larry started going, he says, there are two kinds of politicians, he said, insiders and outsiders. And I would imagine Larry Summers sees himself as an outsider, as a politician in this context. Really, policymakers, people in power. There are two kinds of politicians, he said, insiders and outsiders. The outsiders prioritize their freedom to speak their version of the truth. The price of their freedom is that they're ignored by the insiders who make important decisions. The insiders, for their part, follow a sacrosanct rule. Never turn against other insiders and never talk to outsiders about what insiders say or do. Their reward, access to inside information, and a chance, though no guarantee, of influencing powerful people and outcomes. With that, Summers arrived at his question. So, Yanis, he said, which of the two are you? Yanis said, by character, I'm a natural outsider, I began, but I hasten to add, I'm prepared to strangle my character if that would help strike a new deal for Greece that gets our people out of debt prison. Summers went on to say, fair enough. But that explanation of insiders and outsiders, I think there's a lot to learn from that. I mean, I think there are politicians who make the calculation that Varoufakis did in that moment to save Greece in his mind, which is I'm an outsider, but I can function as an insider. You know, I'm willing to trade those things. That's something that comes up in our politics, I think, quite a bit with some of our faves, even.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah. But you can also see that in the context of someone like Ezra Klein, I think there is value to him to have access. He clearly wants to influence a lot of these Democratic politicians in as an insider. And sometimes that may, you make your decision there as to, how you're going to approach things. And people make that calculation. But also then, of course, also the lesson that Larry Summers says is that, like, we protect our own. And so, you know, if we're at the Epstein Island and I see a political rival, all of a sudden we're political rivals. But what we are together transcends that. We're elite in some fashion.
Yep.
And, you know, David Day and other folks have been going in. I think Matt Slower tweet about it. Larry Summers' public role in politics should have got him run out of town 100% years ago.
100%.
Exactly.
He is... You don't need this information to know how odious Larry Summers is. Like, all the publicly available information about Larry Summers over the years, his perspective on women as president of Harvard, his perspective on Biden's administration on economic policy, his perspective on his promising that Barack Obama was going to bail out homeowners as a way of sort of like placating people prior to the election and policy fights, all of it should have been enough to get him jettisoned into space.
Yeah.
As far as like getting close to policymakers. But if it's the Epstein case that gets him away from students at Harvard and makes him toxic, keeps him out of like Project 2029 or whatever it is, at the gets him off the board of the Center for American Progress.
You listening, Neera?
Now, Neera thinks I'm paid by the Republican Party, so she's probably not listening to this show.
She's an insane person.
Very insane. But
like, why? Like, these people are all still in the driver's seat.
Yeah. Recently, she said that, which I found interesting. She's waded back into Twitter. But the fact that this person is crafting policy for this like major think tank is just insane. I mean, these are all that whole class of Democrat from the Clinton era should be completely irrelevant at this point. I mean, they are, but they have institutional relevance, which is crazy to me. Sam, I'm curious just about your take on this one thing that I saw. I can't credit who made this point, but I think it's an interesting one, is like why the Epstein case is capturing for younger people, like maybe younger than 40, outside of the salaciousness of it, of course, outside of the scandal. There's a point about like, is it a proxy for millennials or the younger generation and this older, bloated, elite class
100%.
Of wealth hoarders who think, like, I mean, Larry Summers, who thinks he knows better, who is there just really to maintain an exploitative financial institution, like that the idea that these people are continue getting away with everything and that being a major divide in our politics even right now, I think is kind of, you know, just as something to think about.
I think why did Trump's drain the swamp have such an allure? I mean, it had an allure to everyone, even if you were not a Trump supporter, because you didn't necessarily believe that he wasn't of the swamp. But the idea is that like there is we live in two Americas on some level. And, the idea that there is a class of people, some form of aristocracy, it's usually demarcated by money in our society, for the most part it is, that lives with a second separate set of rules. I mean, this is not new to this era. It's just that it has more resonance now. Like if you go back and, you know, look at like Glenn Greenwald was writing about this. You know, Matt Taibbi was writing about this.
Not so much now.
Not so much now. Chris Hayes was writing about fractal inequality at Davos.
Right.
You know, 15 years ago, there was a real sense in the wake of Occupy. And I will say, even in the buildup to Occupy, I mean, I remember sitting in the Current offices and saying to somebody in 2008, the head of Current at that time, the real issue is insiders versus outsiders. There was a real sense once like the internet became a vehicle for politics with a blogosphere. It was happening like that's what, you know, Daily Kos and Netroots Nation for a period of time was about outsiders influencing politics from the insiders. And that divide has become in many ways like more poignant. in that the insiders are like a smaller and more insulated, yes, insulated group. And it is both, it tracks with age to some extent,
Right.
Certainly money and class.
But to your point, but that point is, are you saying basically that the internet was like a vehicle for more outsiders to try to influence politics in that way? I'm just making sure because I wanted to kind of connect,
yes,
these things. Like, this is where the Democrats are such abysmal failures too, where how did they miss this Epstein stuff? We were talking, Brian, off air the other day about how, like, many of the stuff we've heard for years, like about Trump and Epstein. I mean,
because the Clintons,
right?
It's because the Clintons are more implicated than Trump.
But I mean, even in 2016, right? Like after Clinton was kind of obviously, you know, she lost that election. Like there was all of this information out there, and the Epstein case was capturing people on the internet. Like the fact that the Democrats couldn't understand that phenomenon, chose to ignore it essentially, and kind of enclose, is also, I think, indicative of, like, what?
I think the reason why it's has salience now and didn't then is because the right was invested in it.
But the right was, I mean, like, Epstein was all Alex Jones was talking about in the lead up to 2016. I mean, this was a real, real story at the time. Like, I mean,
yeah, the Republicans took all of the energy and sublimated into QAnon.
Yes. And so all I'm saying is that, like, I mean, when we're seeing how this party has missed the moment so repeatedly, the fact that they couldn't or chose actively not to capitalize on the wealth of material out there for Donald Trump shows exactly what the problem is that, you know, there's a complete lack of feel for the national mood in terms of outsiders, insiders, etc.
Yeah, but I think that, like, I honestly don't know that Epstein translated into that until there was pushback about releasing it. I mean, remember, like, you know, he went to jail under the Biden administration. Under Trump. I mean, he went to jail. He was already dead by the time you get to the Biden administration.
Yes.
So, and he went to jail under the Trump administration. And so there wasn't this sense of, like, the guy's going to get away with it. And there wasn't a sense of, like, people are getting off, because there was at least a perception of like, well, the guy's getting held to justice. There isn't, you know.
But it's two things. One, I'm sorry.
It wasn't until the right, though, because, like, we wouldn't cover it.
No, I know. But, I mean, I think there's two things. One, this is not even the biggest point. I'm just trying to make sure my point is cogent. It's that, like, you have a Democratic Party that's constantly trying to appeal to a mainstream media headline focused strategy. You talk about how Chuck Schumer always knows what's going to be on the front page of the New York Times. That's his, like, skill in terms of dealing with the media. That's what he talks about. They miss all of the internet stuff. They miss the blogs that you're talking
totally
about. They miss it now. But that kind of alternative reaction brewing on the internet is indicative of what we're talking about here, where that is the outsider space where people are developing opinions that the party is just entirely missing, or interests, or, you know, that the institution of the Democratic Party is entirely missing. And so I do think it's connected in that way, in the fact that they couldn't understand or harness something like this.
I see.
And because they are pursuing, too, this obsession with a suburban Republican and the professional class Democrat. The lack of willingness to wade into anything that would resemble conspiracism is a genuine, like, problem for the party's brand, because it's not full conspiracism. You don't need to be talking about QAnon. But when you're talking about how the government is functioning and the institution works for you, and that there aren't these dark, nefarious forces behind the scenes, you stack the deck against you in the anti-establishment fight inherently.
I think conceptually, perceiving there to be some type of, like, the Democrats, like, brain that thinks about things is wrong. I think the difference is that I can just tell you, any type of organized money was allergic to Air America, because the the money on the nominal left, and I'm using left in an extremely broad American version of it.
Okay.
That being, you know, the Democratic Party and to the left of that. The big money there is completely allergic to populism because it is not, and it's decidedly not in their interest. The right was funding the hell out of these things because it was a way in which they had a right-wing populism. And even there, and their in their right-wing populism actually benefited money. It was really more about nativism. So on the nominal left, you would not have funding. You would not grow. All these people were outsiders in the sense that they weren't, you know, they wouldn't even get advertising. You could barely even get unions to support blogs. On the right, the Mercers, the Foster Freezes, they're just dumping money into this stuff because they all had aligned interests insofar as we're going to cut taxes, we're going to get rid of government, so that's just going to unshackle our corporate endeavors. We're going to undermine labor rights, and then the argument is like, we outlaw contraception or do we get rid of immigrants? Like that's the competitive spaces there. And they're just pumping money into there. And so the influences grow. I mean, the Koch brothers in 2012, was it, had an entire like apparatus to compete with the Republican Party. The party itself became so weak. That's why Trump did so well, is because the RNC, as it were, completely was diminished in power because the Koch brothers put so much money in and created another, basically flattened everything. And so it's not that the Democrats didn't think about this in that way. It's just that the influences that existed there, it wasn't really like, why are like even politicians, you know, contacting us to get on? It's because of what happened on the right. There's nothing organic that happened on the left that made them realize, like, we need to go with these people.
But happened on the right was a deliberate strategy by Steve Bannon, like, in the sense that
was part of it. I mean, the Mercers were supporting it. But,
yeah, I know.
You're kind of saying the same thing. I mean, the problem is the Democrats are allergic to any kind of populism. And do you use a different example than Epstein? Because I don't necessarily...
Well, the money's allergic to any type of populism, and the money is always going to influence the political decision.
Yeah, but, like, look at the JFK assassination stuff, too. That should be a Democratic issue, and then Trump basically owned it for the Republicans somehow, and now like you have people talking about JFK. It's Anna Paulina Luna, because this entire I think it is like a professional class thing. The only people who think JFK wasn't killed as a result of a conspiracy are college educated white people.
That's
the only cohort in this country, and that's who the Democrats have decided to speak to, and that's why they have no sense of touch with like actual how to be populists in America.
Matt is saying my point better than I did. That's really, in summary, what I'm trying to say there, basically.
It's just that there should be more... I think part of the problem is that, and not to defend the current crop of Democrats, but part of the problem is that how do you both maintain a faith in government and also entertain these things? And it's far more important, obviously, the Democrats to maintain a faith in government, because you're asking, you know, in a perfect world, government is going to be providing everybody our health insurance, not just one third of us through Medicaid and Medicare, but everybody. We're going to trust the government on a whole host of things. And so undermining government, and that's what the whole, anti-vax stuff was about. Undermining, it wasn't about corporations, right? I mean, it at the end of the day, because they certainly aren't taking it out on corporations. It was about undermining the government's ability to provide, you know, public health and to control businesses and say, hey, wait a second. You can't force people to come in to your thing, or we're going to put restrictions on you. And so it's a much tougher sort of line to walk there when it comes to admitting government's failures. Now, I think the irony is that by not admitting the government's failures, you know, I think you can go too far. You keep too many secrets, and things become too overly classified. And I do think that is a function of like a certain mentality that is really more bred. I think like you mix sort of like some type of academics with high finance, which is what Larry Summers is, which is what Robert Rubin is, which is the entire sort of like financialization element of the Democrats that came in. You have Masters of the Universe sort of meets these sort of like academics, and all of a sudden they're like, well, we can't afford to cut in the people into this conversation.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just think that there's a fine line between you can, I think, really make a case that government programs and services can work for people, but also have a real acknowledgement of the fact that our national security state and policing and federal, like the very communities that the Democratic Party wants to have a corner on, like, you know, like Black people, people of color in this country have been impacted, you know, by the so-called deep state in a way that I think like we could have a little bit of a smarter approach in terms of dealing with it and not being so institutional. But we're splitting.
I also think it makes sense for the class of people you're talking about, Matt and Emma, to be less skeptical of the government because to be less skeptical of the elite because from a hierarchy standpoint, they've won.
Right.
And so, like, you know, Barack Obama's optimism about America was very much like, hey, if I can make it, anybody can make it. And it's like, actually, no, dude.
Let me be clear. This rocks.
Yeah. I mean,
that was
like, you know, that gets back to that thing that Elliot Spitzer told me when he was half, you know, half in the bag. He's like, Barack Obama believes these guys are actually know what they're talking about.
That was one of the most troubling Epstein email releases, is that Epstein said that Obama got in touch with Dershowitz to talk about Israel. It's like, oh.
Yeah.
You're calling out Dershowitz.
Wrong guy.
I mean, the right is actually having their own issues with how seriously to take conspiracy theories and the sort of parapolitics considerations, if we want to look at
Giovanni
and Joe Rogan here. So this is first Joe sort of brings up Peter Thiel out of nowhere. We can watch this.
It's been an interesting experience, you know, and that's life. It's just like
life is an interesting experience.
Yeah,
it really, truly is. You know, so. But it can be awesome and it can suck.
The
reason why.
Yeah, we have to stop for a second and just sort of.
I told you. I know this is like people aren't going to find this reference amusing, but in The Bachelor, there was this contestant that asked the lead, "What are three things in life that makes you excited?" And I remember his first response was, "Excitement." And that's what this conversation reminds me of. Like life is a crazy experience. It's like almost the ultimate experience, honestly.
Well, there's going to be a turn here you might not be ready for.
Okay. Well, it is a little bit difficult to criticize Rogan saying that by citing The Bachelor.
It's awesome.
I'm a Renaissance
because it can suck.
I got a lot of different interests.
Watch TV.
Yeah.
It's like how all the Republicans, like when they talk about... They
make The Bachelor is so much worse than Survivor.
Hey, I stopped watching that like 5 years ago, okay?
This is just like The Hunger Games.
I watched Survivor.
It can be awesome and it can suck. And the reason why it's awesome is because it can suck. Like that's... You need them all.
Yeah.
While we're human. And I think that's... We have only so much sand left in that hourglass. Where the humans are on the way out. I know a lot of people hate it when Peter Thiel says it. Like, Peter Thiel is a terrible person. He's evil.
Do you think he is?
No. I think he's just telling you the truth. I think he's, you know, when they said, do you think human beings should survive? And he had like this long pause.
Oh, yeah, I remember.
And then the interviewer was like, the answer is yes. The answer is yes. The human beings survive. Which is not how you're supposed to do an interview. Well, at least not how I do it. I would let him talk as long as he wants. Like, I would let.
Wow.
If you watch my podcast I did with him, is these long ass stammers. Where he's like, Everything he does, he wants to be very careful before he answers it. So he wants to consider what he's saying. If you ask me the same question, is it important that humans survive? Okay. Is it important that Australopithecus survived? It's not. Is it important that Neanderthal survived? It's not currently. Currently not important. Is it important that humans stay in this form? It's not. It's not going to be. If we're going to evolve.
We can cut that part there.
Let's address this. Because I will say, like, I do think that the idea that life can suck is important for you to appreciate the experiences. That is a sort of, there's a lot of, like, sort of, like, that is a, there's a lot of that philosophy. There's some like a little bit of Buddhism in that.
Without suck, there can't be awesome.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Without suck, there can't be awesome.
You surf's know, up, bro.
I'm trying to remember who it was that said, like, you need to cry every day to enjoy. But
nice.
Was it my father who said that?
Jordan Peterson?
But this whole question of, like, is it important for humans to exist? On one hand, you know, I remember, like, James Lovelock, the scientist who found the hole in the ozone layer, and we ended up fixing it, incidentally, was asked about climate change in, like, the mid-aughts. He's a British guy. He's passed away, and he said, "I think, you know, it's good that people are talking about it now, but it's way too late." And he was like, "By 2080, Europe will be sub-Saharan. By the end of the century, we will have lost. Two-thirds of our population." Mm-hmm. And they said, "That's pretty dark." And he goes, "Well, I'm a scientist. There's really no difference between 1 million humans and 6 million, 6 billion, 1 billion humans and 6 billion humans or whatever." And that's one take to have. But the problem is that when you sort of toss that around, it has a very bad influence on our politics.
Yeah.
Because then all of a sudden, like, oh, a million extra people or 1.5 million extra people died because of COVID. What are you going to do? Like, the problem with his attitude, so cavalier about it, it opens the door to human suffering meaning nothing. And it opens the door to people who can avoid human suffering by having all the resources. Also, no judgment. No judgment. And so the idea that it's inevitable that and it's not important for humans to exist in the future is one which is not just pure nihilism. It is also based upon where you're positioned in class, because everything that trickles down from that attitude basically means that human suffering is irrelevant. And if you can avoid it, there's and subject others to it by your avoidance, what's the diff?
And that avoidance is exactly what, like, the current elite class of people in the world are trying to create via the political system with the network state, with Gil Durand's kind of reporting on this. But, like, rich guys like Joe Rogan, who when COVID hit, he had his bunker to go to. He had his compound isolated from other people. You see, like, reporting about how these billionaires are building bunkers and, like, underground lairs basically beneath their properties so that they'll have somewhere to go. Their vision is not a humanist one. It's one that doesn't actually believe in the concept of humanity. They're either going underneath their bunker or they're going to Mars to colonize that area because they don't necessarily see they don't see value in our shared humanity. And that's why being a billionaire and being a rich person like this has basically fundamentally become a mental illness. They can't relate to regular people's concerns, and they're now the ones driving our politics in a way that is just about enriching them and enclosing. and building up walls. Like what we're seeing about like the failures of liberalism and markets, like we have to move towards socialism and democratic socialism here in this country. But the right's reaction is walls, enclosures, isolation, be by yourself. And Joe Rogan's media output has been essential in furthering that kind of paranoia that's led to this. Sorry, Matt.
I mean, that's the thing that turned Michael against Joe Rogan is when he started reproducing that bullshit about white genocide in South Africa.
Yeah.
Peter Thiel, yeah, it's probably pretty convenient for him to come to a conclusion that human suffering doesn't matter because he is a defense contractor that sells AI to Israel. And that's, in fact, something that Theo Von brings up here a little bit later in this interview here, and look at the way that Joe Rogan responds to it.
Fake emails, fake person, wait, they're in. If you don't make people, and then you know, what are you going to do? You're going to require a digital ID? Fuck that. You should be able to be a whistleblower. If you're working from some company and you find out they're dumping nuclear waste into the ocean and it's killing all the fish, someone should be able to anonymously report that. And you should be able to do that through social media without having a digital ID that shows exactly who you are.
And they can shut you down.
I'll just say real quick before Theo goes on. You should be able to do that through the government, not like a social network. What are you talking about?
You should be able to tweet it, your whistleblower.
You should be able to have a million followers on Twitter as a whistleblower. Yeah. And
I mean, that's the thing about COVID. Like, we shouldn't have been litigating that shit on podcasts. That's for scientists to get into. But anyway, here's the meat.
Just like, I don't know.
It's sketchy times.
Well, sketchy times. I mean, the same company, that company Palantir, that was doing all that crazy stuff in Gaza, and they were like, you know, the own running
what were
all
they
the
doing?
All the drones and stuff like this, allegedly.
If you want to what are you talking about? What are you saying they did?
That they had like were compiling data on people that were there, and they were operating a lot of the
pause
drones
for
and stuff.
I'm sorry. I'm asking myself this question and go back a little bit so we can hear his entire spiel here. Do you think Theo Von knows that Palantir is owned by Thiel?
I don't think he does.
I don't think
moment.
He does. And you can hear Rogan getting super defensive because Rogan definitely knows that Palantir is owned by Thiel.
And I love him like trying to get Theo to follow up here, knowing that Theo's just not equipped to give a real explanation about Palantir's technological surveillance of Gaza and like the AI that it's used to help the genocide. But
yeah,
like,
not just allegedly. Project Lavender, you can see 972 magazine.
Like,
yeah.
Can you imagine if Theo Von, like Joe Rogan came on his podcast and he was like, get specific, Joe. I mean, that's not going to fly.
Fact checker Joe is on the case.
Yeah, right. When his buddy's involved.
It can shut you down. It's just like, I don't know.
It's sketchy times.
Well, sketchy times. I mean, the same company, that company Palantir, that was doing all that crazy stuff in Gaza, and they were like, you know, the own running
what were
all
they
the
doing?
All the drones and stuff like this, allegedly.
If you want to what are you talking about? What are you saying they did?
That they had like were compiling data on people that were there, and they were operating a lot of the drones in the sky that also had weapons attached to them.
Okay, so you mean like facial recognition data?
Right.
Do they have that capability with drones? Where they could just zoom around. Is this horseshit? Is this real? Jamie's not even willing to talk on camera. He's giving
I'll
me winks
quiet,
and nods.
But
I'm sure they do.
We have
No.
They
listen.
Got a big contract in America now, which is scary to me. That's what's scary to me, mm-hmm. that a drone could go by.
Well, it's actually being used currently on Americans, Joe. If that like if you want actually some homegrown concerns about Palantir,
but not Peter Thiel. What am I going to? He's one of my top sponsors.
Yeah,
I only have 3 hours with him. I might have to ask him about it next time he wants to come on.
Yeah, they are literally right now. They're signing. They just weeks ago signed very lucrative contracts with ICE to do this very thing on American soil. So you don't need a fact check for that.
From this 972 magazine that I would recommend for everybody looking into what Theo's talking about. According to the sources, there's an additional automated system, including one called Where's Daddy, where people might remember this one. Drones would fly down and play sounds of children crying to lure people out so then they could kill them.
I thought Daddy's Home, also the other crazy one, was when they would, if they had like some quota for the amount of innocent people that they would bomb when there was a so-called suspected Hamas militant in the building.
Where's Daddy might be a different one. It's still, the title is gross, but that's specifically to track targeted individuals and carrying out bombings when they had entered their families' residences.
The Gaza Strip is the most surveilled place on the planet. They pretend like they have no way to know about these so-called civilian casualties throughout the genocide, which was actually what they were trying to do. But in terms of their public pretense about this, they know exactly where everybody is. They know where to send a drone so that they can shoot a doctor directly in the head when he's in the hospital and then fly away and know exactly what to do there. Like, it's literally like shooting fish in a barrel. And the Palantir and the AI technology and all of the other stuff that... Read The Palestine Laboratory by Anthony Lowenstein, which talks about how weapon systems and surveillance technology has been used and tested in the Gaza Strip prior to October 7th, prior to the genocide. And that's where they fine-tune this crap, and then they bring it back here. So, you know, Joe got a little pissy there, but he's more ignorant than Theo Vaughn on this, who actually was on the money.
It's crazy to have Peter Thiel and guys like that in for hours and be a conspiracy guy.
And not even have a notion of that.
Yeah.
Cole from Little Rock, is this horse shit? Is this real? Needs to be a drop. We got a request for that, and also Pam Bondi saying information.
Did you ever watch The Prisoner? We want information. Information. You don't remember that?
No.
That was only for Sam. I wouldn't even ask you to then.
When was that movie from?
It's a TV show from the 60s.
Okay.
Was it the guy from like Coal Shack?
It's British.
Oh, no. Okay. I don't know. I wouldn't do that. Apple cideritis. Joe, what am I going to do? Push back, Rogan. Golden Oyster Cookie. Can Matt start starting reading for JFK? I was an old school anti-conspiracy person, and I would still have hold on from inertia. I'm much more open to that now. What was the one Untouchables or Unspeakables?
JFK and the Unspeakable is that's a pretty big one. I think a good introduction is Anthony Summers' Not in Your Lifetime, which goes into the Warren Commission stuff. Not in Lifetime is a quote from Earl Warren saying, "We're not going to release all this stuff."
I will tell you.
Do you like Devil's
Bargain
too,
right? I once asked Bobby Kennedy which book, and he said The Unspeakables.
Yeah, I think he blurbed that one. There's another one.
At the very least, it gives you insight maybe into his mentality.
Yeah,
JFK and the Unspeakable is a very interesting book. It's a little bit into like Christian theology and stuff like that, which is less my bag, but it's still worth reading.
MJS617, Sam, speaking of Schumer and his insipid focus on the New York Times headlines, have you seen his floor resolution regarding Fuentes? Goes without saying that anti-Semitism is bad, but everything this guy does is performative and speaks to a very narrow slice of the electorate. Everyone on Schumer's left knows Fuentes is an anti-Semite, and Republicans will be unresponsive to his flaccid attempt to paint them in a corner.
Yeah.
Also,
it just all it does is legitimizing him more and more. Like, I mean, we're going to do a bill about, like this is exactly what the Groypers want.
100%.
He's actually an ignorant idiot that is is going to inflame anti-Semitism and raise Fuentes' profile with this garbage. I mean, I'm sorry. That's insane to do that.
That's what you'd put on your book blurb. The Chuck Schumer did a resolution against me. And really, like, it would expand your audience.
Of course he doesn't understand anything about the social media, because if he knew anything about that, he would know that the Groypers are about to, like, pin this bill to the top of their 4chan. Chuck, do you understand what you've done?
Did I heard you say social media?
Yeah, I did.
Because that's pricked up my ears. I have social media. What are we going to do? Want to do a TikTok-y?
Tiki-talk. Not when you say it like that.
Tiki-talk. gonna do a Insta. I've got myself a Finsta, so I can go on there without anybody knowing it's
me. What's the handle?
What? Well, I'm not gonna tell you.
I thought I'd get you.
Nice try.
The other book, Warren Hickel and William Turner, Deadly Secrets, the CIA Mafia War Against Castro.
Definitely not Cameron. I am again wondering why Matt Gaetz was the preferred candidate over Pam Bondi. Yeah. Well, I think Trump probably felt like I have him, you know, where I want him. But also, I'm not convinced that Matt Gaetz wasn't like a... when I used to write scripts for networks, I would add a scene that was like, I wrote this to be cut so that I could give one to the executives. And they go, hey, what about this scene? I'm like, I don't know.
I'm telling you,
actually,
though,
you know what? That's a very good note. And
I mean,
we'll cut it.
Those Epstein emails where they talk about leverage against Donald Trump, like, we should not underestimate the value of blackmail in these elite circles to keep these people in check. I mean, I think that Trump thinks that way. I mean, I think Hegseth is a really great example of somebody who he thinks he can keep in line in that way.
Oh, I would definitely. And you want people who, like, they would never get this job if it wasn't for me.
Right.
Like, there's no way. There is no universe where Matt Gaetz down the road is going to get a job as attorney. There's just no universe except for Trump. And so it's like, you know, that's Glenn Beck ate my dad. Indiana state Republicans have gotten so many threats this week. I think like 7 senators have gotten some type of threat swatting. Mike Braun isn't turning the political rhetoric down either, saying how he's supporting the leader change in the state house because Indiana is not doing the redistricting. Yep.
Wow.
Daniel from Virginia. The Coast Guard has already reversed the swastika thing. Well, that's good.
That makes you feel so much better.
But the noose thing?
The noose thing. Well, let's not get carried away. I mean, we're sailors. We use knots all the time.
Oh, did we headline that Nadia Velasquez was retiring?
No.
I just wanted to point that out because this is New York 7's congressional district is maybe like the bluest in the country. I mean, it's like we could have a real DSA, another DSA elected coming out of that. And I also just want to give credit to Nadia Velasquez, who's I think in her early 70s or mid 70s at the very least, who is doing the thing that all of these Democrats should be doing and stepping aside, even though she's still one of our most progressive representatives for a new generation of leadership.
She's
so
72.
Good for her. I mean, she's like a really great representative for quite a long time. And I am excited to see who comes out of that district.
Meat and potatoes. I've been watching MR for so long that I remember when you all used to mock and laugh at anyone who insisted that Jeffrey Epstein was murdered while in custody and did not commit suicide. You're 6 years late, but we're very happy to finally have you aboard the truth train. All aboard. Choo choo. Let's meet Jimmy Dore in the bar cart. I took a position one way or another. My attitude was it really doesn't fundamentally matter.
Yeah, and go back and clip it.
And I'm also like not convinced that any of the Jeffrey Epstein thing stuff like matters beyond its political relevance right now. Because there's nothing that surprises me about the idea that, I mean, you know, it could be Larry Summers showing up there. There could have been, I don't know, it could have been Robert Rubin. I mean, who knows? Like, the specific individuals are less relevant. The idea that there was people who would overlook this stuff or, like, you know, are swayed by money or are inside the establishment, that is also not a new concept to me. But the value of it now is that it's tearing apart the right, and it's undermining Donald Trump's presidency, and that's why it's important to me right now.
And for my part, I don't remember ever having a position about his death.
I don't think I did either.
Besides that, either he was killed or allowed to kill himself. Both of those are huge problems for our justice system.
Yeah, I think I was of the mind that it was more like, you know, that when, I can't remember now. What's the actor who played Tom, the guy in the Godfather, the Consigliere, when he goes and he meets with the guy in prison.
Duvall?
Yeah, Duvall, when he meets with the guy in prison and says, like, you know, we'll take care of your family. And he tells him the story about the Roman senators or something, and basically says it's time for you to kill yourself now.
Right. I that was, I think...
That person will not be able to find a clip of us laughing at the idea that...
You were probably making fun of, like, people who are saying that, like, Hillary Clinton killed him herself or some shit.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the jury's still out. Skidmark Twain, a Trump glazer Scott Jennings, was calling for repeal of Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. I have no doubt. Tomo Flink, happy casual Friday, folks. Here in Britain, former Nigel Farage ally Nathan Gill has been sentenced to 10 years and 6 months in prison for taking bribes in exchange for supporting Russia. Also, my submission for best of is every time Sam made Emma picture what he did in Tim Pool's toilet.
Great.
Oh, gosh.
Great. Love it.
Thanks. I did not do that. Layoff, payoff, matching MR tattoos when.
Germos.
Do I?
Yeah.
No, I'm terrified of needles.
Needles. I don't have one either. Matt doesn't have one.
Are you kidding?
Brian has enough for the.
Yeah, I have like 20.
For all of us.
My daughter has. Mila's got tons of tattoos.
Really?
Yep. And I'm just like, dude, it physically harms me when you do that.
She's cooler than I am. Like, I don't think I could pull them off, but.
Germo says Sammy is back. Sammy, tell me this is not taking place. New federal benefit payment is the name for Social Security Administration. The insanity continues. I don't know. I hope not. Illuminati kids, Republicans are currently, yeah, look at this evil the U.S. has done, but that's cool or good as long as we stay on top. Democrats can't even agree that demonizing Cuba is stupid. Progressive blob, also rich people getting richer and skilled workers not finding jobs in their chosen fields is getting bar and restaurant jobs to serve those rich peoples. Ryan from Rochester. FYI, the temp worker job is the modern descendant of slavery. It is immoral and disgusting and needs to be abolished. Abolish prison labor, abolish undocumented status with asylum for all, abolish temp working status. Make James from Houston. Earlier this week when y'all were talking about ICE, Houston Chronicle confirmed that our mayor and HPD have been collaborating with ICE. Our local DSA chapter and civil rights group used the city council meeting to rip John Whitmire apart and beg for any kind of flight from the city. He's the longest serving Democrat in the state government before becoming mayor of the city. Jeez. All right. Five more and then we're out of here. Hester. I love Ken and Ken and Ken, but can you guys do a show where you all have to stay in a Harry Enten character? No way it could last over 5 minutes.
What do you say, pal? Yeah.
AOC's numbers are flying me to the moon.
He does have theater kid energy, does he not?
Totally. Bubba the Horse. Peter Thiel and his ilk with their billion and end time bunkers and weddings in Venice have removed themselves completely from human existence. Mass suffering or even human extinction does not matter to them.
Use phrases like the cat's meow to do Harry Enten.
Silly science people, the Discord has a group working on a compilation of rapid response teams across all states. If you're aware of teams in red states in particular, let us know in the organizing RT thread. Some people are concerned that doing that makes it easier for feds to infiltrate these groups. I'm not so convinced. That would argue that they're not going to put 5 minutes into it. like they're going to, you know, if they're going to a specific area, they're going to find these groups. I think at the end of the day, it's going to provide more help for people who are looking to join them than it will the feds who are looking to sort of disrupt them. Kyle Leck, Sam, use the Discord to organize the whistle making. We'll get there. Bull Prod. There was an abundance of space between Epstein's private and public life. Jester from Jersey. Sorry if you already mentioned this. Been in and out listening today. Will you guys cover Zohran's meeting with Trump?
It's at three.
So unfortunately, we won't be able to do it until Monday.
Yeah, and it's so far it's listed as closed to the press.
It'll be. There's no doubt in my mind that Trump's going to do something, right?
Public, yeah,
yeah. To Dimpra. Sam, by any chance, he related to the late, great Samuel L. Cedar, who was known for his catchphrase, say bidet again, I dare you, and left his best, a mother effer. All right, and the final IM of the week. Kirby, pin this bill to the top of their 4chan is a very Chuck Schumer-esque way to describe 4chan.
I don't go on 4chan because I'm not a Nazi. But...
Matt, Brian, Emma, great job today, folks. See you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bar. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light's shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made. The option where you don't get paid for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess somehow I lost my drive between the 101 and the 5. Do you know?
Was it the guy from like Coal Shack?
British.
Oh, no, okay, I don't know. I wouldn't do that. Apple cideritis. Joe, what am I going to do? Push back, Rogan. Golden Oyster Cook. Can Matt start starting reading for JFK? I was an old school anti-conspiracy person, and I would still have hold on from inertia. I'm much more open to that now. What was the one that I Untouchables or Unspeakables?
JFK and the Unspeakable is that's a pretty big one. I think a good introduction is Anthony Summers, Not in Your Lifetime, which goes into the Warren Commission stuff. Not in Lifetime is a quote from Earl Warren saying, we're not going to release all this stuff.
I will tell you,
I once asked
Bobby Kennedy which book, and he said The Unspeakables.
Yeah, I think he blurbed that one. Yeah, there's another one.
The very least, it gives you insight maybe into his mentality.
Yeah,
JFK and The Unspeakable is a very interesting book. It's a little bit into like Christian theology and stuff like that, which is less my bag, but it's still worth reading.
MJS617, Sam, speaking of Schumer and his insipid focus on the New York Times headlines, have you seen his floor resolution regarding Fuentes? Goes without saying that anti-Semitism is bad, but everything this guy does is performative and speaks to a very narrow slice of the electorate. Everyone on Schumer's left knows Fuentes is an anti-Semite, and Republicans will be unresponsive to his flaccid attempt to paint them in a corner.
Yeah. All it does is legitimizing him more and more. Like, I mean, we're going to do a bill about, like this is exactly what the Groypers want.
100%.
He's He's actually an ignorant idiot that is going to inflame anti-Semitism and raise Fuentes as his profile with this garbage. I mean, I'm sorry. That's insane to do that.
That's what you'd put on your book blurb. The Chuck Schumer did a resolution against me. And really, like, it would expand your audience.
Of course he doesn't understand anything about the social media, because if he knew anything about that, he would know that the Groypers are about to, like, pin this bill to the top of their 4chan. Chuck, do you understand what you've done?
Did I heard you say social media?
Yeah, I did.
Because that's pricked up my ears. I have social media. What are we going to do? Want to do a TikTok-y?
Tiki Not talk. When you say it like that.
Tiki talk. Gonna do a Insta. I've got myself a Finsta. So I can go on there without anybody knowing it's
What's
me.
What's the handle?
What? I'm not gonna tell you.
Oh, I thought I'd get you.
Nice try.
The other book, Warren Hickel and William Turner, Deadly Secrets, the CIA Mafia War Against Castro.
Definitely not Cameron. I am, again, wondering why Matt Gaetz was the preferred candidate over Pam Bondi. Yeah. Well, I think Trump probably felt like I have him, you know, where I want him. But also, I'm not convinced that Matt Gaetz wasn't like a... when I used to write scripts for networks, I would add a scene that was like, I wrote this to be cut so that I could give one to the executives. And they go, hey, what about this scene? Like, I don't know.
I'm telling you,
actually,
though,
you know what? That's a very good note. That's a very good note. And
I mean,
we'll cut it.
Those Epstein emails where they talk about leverage against Donald Trump, like, we should not underestimate the value of blackmail in these elite circles to keep these people in check. I mean, I think that Trump thinks that way. I mean, I think Hegseth is a really great example of somebody who he thinks he can keep in line in that way.
Oh, I would definitely. And you want people who, like, they would never get this job if it wasn't for me.
Right.
Like, there's no way. There is no universe where Matt Gaetz down the road is going to get a job as attorney, there's just no universe except for Trump. And so it's like, you know, that's Glenn Beck ate my dad. Indiana State Republicans have gotten so many threats this week. I think like 7 senators have gotten some type of threat swatting. Mike Braun isn't turning the political rhetoric down either, saying how he's supporting the leader change in the state house because Indiana is not doing the redistricting. Yep.
Wow.
Daniel from Virginia. The Coast Guard has already reversed the swastika thing. Well, that's good.
That makes me feel so much better.
But the noose thing?
The noose thing. Well, let's not get carried away. I mean, we're sailors. We use knots all the time.
Oh, did we headline that Nadia Velasquez was retiring?
No.
I just wanted to point that out because this is New York 7's congressional district is maybe like the bluest in the country. I mean, it's like we could have a real DSA, another DSA elected coming out of that. And I also just want to give credit to Nadia Velasquez, who's I think in her early 70s or mid 70s at the very least, who is doing the thing that all of these Democrats should be doing and stepping aside, even though she's still one of our most progressive representatives for a new generation of leadership.
She's
so
72.
Good for her. I mean, she's like a really great representative for quite a long time. And, I am excited to see who comes out of that district.
Meat and potatoes. I've been watching MR for so long that I remember when you all used to mock and laugh at anyone who insisted that Jeffrey Epstein was murdered while in custody and did not commit suicide. You're 6 years late, but we're very happy to finally have you aboard the truth train. All aboard. Choo choo. Let's meet Jimmy Dore in the bar cart. I don't know that I really, took a position one way or another. My attitude was it really doesn't fundamentally matter.
Yeah, and go back and clip it.
And I'm also like not convinced that any of the Jeffrey Epstein thing stuff like matters beyond its political relevance right now. Because there's nothing that surprises me about the idea that, I mean, you know, it could be Larry Summers showing up there. There could have been, I don't know, it could have been Robert Rubin. I mean, who knows? Like, the specific individuals are less relevant. The idea that there was people who would overlook this stuff or, like, you know, are swayed by money or are inside the establishment, that is also not a new concept to me. But the value of it now is that it's tearing apart the right, and it's undermining Donald Trump's presidency, and that's why it's important to me right now.
And for my part, I don't remember ever having a position about his death.
I don't think I did either.
Besides that, either he was killed or allowed to kill himself. Both of those are huge problems for our justice system.
Yeah, I think I was of the mind that it was more like, you know, that when, God, I can't remember now. What's the actor who played Tom, the guy in the Godfather, the Consigliere, when he goes and he meets with the guy in prison.
Duvall?
Yeah, Duvall, when he meets with the guy in prison and says, like, you know, we'll take care of your family. And he tells him the story about the Roman senators or something, and basically says, it's time for you to kill yourself now.
Right.
That person will not be able to find a clip of us laughing at the idea that
you were probably making fun of, like, people who are saying that, like, Hillary Clinton killed him herself or some shit.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I think the jury's still out. Skidmark Twain, a Trump glazer, Scott Jennings, was calling for repeal of Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act. I have no doubt. Tomo Flink, happy casual Friday, folks. Here in Britain, former Nigel Farage ally Nathan Gill has been sentenced to 10 years and 6 months in prison for taking bribes in exchange for supporting Russia. Also, my submission for best of is every time Sam made Emma picture what he did in Tim Pool's toilet.
Great.
Oh, gosh.
Great. Love it.
Thanks. I did not do that. Layoff, payoff, matching MR tattoos when...
Germos...
Do I?
Yeah.
No, I'm terrified of needles.
Needles. I don't have one either. Matt doesn't have one.
Are you kidding?
Brian has enough for the...
Yeah, I have like 20.
For all of us.
My daughter has... Mila's got tons of tattoos.
Really?
Yep. And I'm just like, dude, it physically harms me when you do that.
She's cooler than I am. Like, I don't think I could pull them off, but...
Germo says Sammy is back. Sammy, tell me this is not taking place. New federal benefit payment is the name for Social Security Administration. The insanity continues. I don't know. I hope not. Illuminati kids. Republicans are currently, look at this evil the U.S. has done, but that's cool or good as long as we stay on top. Democrats can't even agree that demonizing Cuba is stupid. Progressive blob. Also, rich people getting richer and skilled workers not finding jobs in their chosen fields is getting bar and restaurant jobs to serve those rich peoples. Ryan from Rochester. FYI, the temp worker job is the modern descendant of slavery. It is immoral and disgusting and needs to be abolished. Abolish prison labor, abolish undocumented status with asylum for all, abolish temp working status. James from Houston. Earlier this week when y'all talking about ICE, Houston Chronicle confirmed that our mayor and HPD have been collaborating with ICE, our local DSA chapter and civil rights group, used the city council meeting to rip John Whitmire apart and beg for any kind of flight from the city. He's the longest serving Democrat in the state government before becoming mayor of the city. Jeez. All right. Five more and then we're out of here. Hester. I love Ken and Ken and Ken, but can you guys do a show where you all have to stay in a Harry Enten character? No way it could last over 5 minutes.
What do you say, pal? Yeah.
AOC's numbers are flying me to the moon.
He does have theater kid energy, does he not?
Totally. Bubba the Horse. Peter Thiel and his ilk, with their billion and end time bunkers and weddings in Venice, have removed themselves completely from human existence. Mass suffering or even human extinction does not matter to them.
Use phrases like the cat's meow to do Harry Anton.
Silly science people, the Discord has a group working on a compilation of rapid response teams across all states. If you're aware of teams in red states in particular, let us know in the organizing RT thread. Some people are concerned that doing that makes it easier for feds to infiltrate these groups. I'm not so convinced. That would argue that they're not going to put 5 minutes into it. Like, they're going to, you know, if they're going to a specific area, they're going to find these groups. I think at the end of the day, it's going to provide more help for people who are looking to join them than it will the feds who are looking to sort of disrupt them. Kyle Leck, Sam, use the Discord to organize the whistle making. We'll get there. Bull prod. There was an abundance of space between Epstein's private and public life. Jester from Jersey. Sorry if you already mentioned this. Been in and out listening today. Will you guys cover Zohran's meeting with Trump?
It's at 3.
It's at 3. So unfortunately, we won't be able to do it until Monday.
Yeah, and it's listed as closed to the press.
It'll be, there's no doubt in my mind that Trump's going to do something, right?
Public, yeah.
Yeah. To Dimpra. Sam, by any chance, you related to the late, great Samuel L. Cedar? He was known for his catchphrase, say bidet again, I dare you, and left is best, a mother effer. All right, and the final IM of the week. Kirby. Pin this bill to the top of their 4chan is a very Chuck Schumer-esque way to describe 4chan.
I don't go on 4chan because I'm not a Nazi. But
Matt, Brian, Emma, great job today, folks. See you on Monday.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want. But I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know the clock is ticking, but the meds are gonna kick in. And my pilot light shining bright. I get somewhere the choice is made. For the option where you don't get paid. For the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I get somehow I lost my drive.